In today's episode, we talk about how to prepare for pregnancy and parenthood. We get a lot of questions about what people can be doing ahead of time, no matter where they are on their journey. And Dr. Morgan and I really break down authentically what we think about what things and what steps that we can take to prepare for the pregnancy season, as well as the new parenthood season, both as an individual and as a couple. This is a really great, juicy episode, so I can't wait for you to listen. Let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Are you pregnant or trying to conceive and looking for reliable, engaging education around how to have a healthy pregnancy and prepare for the future aspects of motherhood to come, like birth, breastfeeding, and postpartum? Look, I've got you. This is exactly the education you'll receive with my 6-week pregnancy call. You get access to my most comprehensive resource of everything that I wish women knew before heading into motherhood. It's a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 course, and postpartum planning class, all in one. And for 6 straight weeks, we meet for an hour each week on Zoom with a small group of like-minded women going through it too, for you all to ask me questions and get clarity from a trusted expert. I can walk through it with you and hold your hand. The 6-week pregnancy call is only offered 4 times a year, so get on the wait list now. Head to milkmedicine.com for more information or click the link in the show notes. Okay, welcome back to the podcast. Today we are going to talk about preparing for pregnancy and parenthood mentally. Like, what can you be doing? Some things to think about, some conversations to have with your partner or with yourself that can be helpful along this path. Because, you know, there's obviously a lot of different preparation that needs to happen in terms of the medical sense of what's going to happen with your body and how it changes and growing the baby, keeping them healthy, and then, you know, acquiring all the things that you need, the parenthood paraphernalia of like the clothes, the diapers, the whatever. And sometimes I just think that people get very caught up in those sort of phases and then don't really think much about some of these mental emotional impacts that can happen even just right away. What I want to start with is just the idea that it's pretty common, people, you would say that people think and know that your entire life is going to change when you have a baby, right? In a good way, in my opinion, but it also changes a lot of things that maybe, you know, feel like sacrifices for periods of time. Mm-hmm. And it's for sure a season, especially with having a newborn and little children. And then, you know, you keep adding more little children and it all just kind of shifts and changes. But it's just like this, you know, new you, new life. You have kids now. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I think that a lot of people get caught off guard by is that they don't really consider how they may already have those kinds of changes and feel drastically different just when they get pregnant. Yeah. And that can come to a shock, as a shock. And obviously everybody's kind of hoping and dreaming and wishing that you're not going to be somebody that's vomiting all the time and feeling really sick. And some people don't, and some people have a milder experience of that. And, you know, or some people are right where somewhere in the middle. But in my experience, I've had sort of lots of different ones being pregnant. One of the things though that I was not anticipating or I'd never heard of and still don't really hear that many people talk about is the like energetic shift that it took over me in pregnancy, where I was like very wanting to sort of disengage from my life in a way that was really atypical of me. Like I was a lot more quiet. People,
I remember your first pregnancy. I was like, "What happened to Morgan?"
Yeah,
everybody was like, "She's so quiet, not saying anything. What's happening?"
I know, and I felt like I was involuting in myself. Like I always call it this kind of pregnancy introversion. This like idea that you kind of just go inward or whatever. And then I remember with you, with your first pregnancy, really peeling away from work, like not wanting to work at all and having like a lack of creative drive. So those are just two examples of the way that the even idea of starting to build the family. And then once you're like pregnant, your entire life is going to change from that moment on. It's not necessarily once you have the baby in your arms. And so if we've just had a little bit of forethought and we're very intentional about this process, sometimes having these kinds of conversations in our own head or with our partner or the people around us, our mom friends, et cetera, can set us up for success in a different kind of way, because you're not going to be shocked by some of this stuff, or you'll at least heard of it, or you won't feel alone in that moment when you're, and sometimes it can feel really lonely when you're feeling certain things when you're pregnant or you have an early baby where you're like, this shouldn't be happening. I've never heard somebody talk about this. I'm a bad person. I'm a bad mom. I don't like this. What's wrong with me? I should be grateful. Da, da, da. You know, we can beat ourselves up about it to the nth degree. And so anyway, in this episode, we're going to outline some just different things you can think about and get the ball rolling with it.
Yeah. And the one thing I want to say too is just observing as a doctor who has patients and also a person who has friends and family, I find that people's experience really is so varied. And a lot of it is kind of depending on where you came ahead of time. Like, I've had friends who their pregnancy was accidental. They weren't necessarily prepping and preparing. And they woke up one day and was like, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. And, you know, I have one friend in particular who loved to adventure and party. And just, she was very used to her own autonomy and being able to stay up late and do whatever she wanted. And all of a sudden, she had a pregnancy that obviously she came to want, but it wasn't necessarily what she consciously planned for and chose. And she had a really hard time with that, like, loss of her old self. And that can happen either in pregnancy or once the baby comes. And that might be very different than someone's experience who's been trying to conceive for years and years and years. Like me, you know, who you would think as soon as I get pregnant, it doesn't matter what happens, I'll be so grateful. But then you actually have a really hard time and you didn't expect to be depressed that you're pregnant, or, you know, to feel resentment or any of these things. So it just varies. And then it's different for people like you and Wes, weren't together for a super long time before you had kids, versus someone like me and Mike, who've been together for almost 15 years before we had kids. And so how that changes, because if a couple is used to a certain dynamic together, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're not having sex and you're throwing up all the time, or now you have a new baby and you're used to a decade of that not being the case and you being all about each other, like, it can just bring lots of different things for different people depending on where you are along your journey. So I just want to highlight that.
I'm glad you brought that up too, because I really, really thought that I like ruined Wes and I's relationship in getting pregnant so early. So we had been together for a year, we got engaged, and then he's older than I am. He's 8 years older than I am. And I was in the middle of medical school with you. And I was just kind of like, okay, when we're going to have our wedding, we can either have a baby beforehand and the baby will be at the wedding, or we'll have to wait until afterwards. And then probably at that point, we'll be waiting until I'm done with school. And I was just like completely overtaken, possessed by maternal instinct. I could not think about anything else. And it was like ruining my life. I was like, I need a baby like right now. I cannot imagine waiting like 4 more years or whatever it was. And so we decided, okay, well, we have this like little window. If we get pregnant in the window, then cool. And if we don't get pregnant in the window, then we're just going to wait until after, because I didn't want to be like, you know, immediately postpartum or pregnant in a wedding dress kind of thing. And so we got pregnant the first month, which is extremely lucky. And it was definitely shocking even for me. I was like, well, that was easy. Okay. You know, and I was 26. Let's see. I was 26. Yes. When I got pregnant with him. So I was definitely like on the early end of my friend group too, having children. I think I was like one of the first in several different of my friends. And so I was a little bit nervous about that. But I remember very, very vividly one moment sitting on the floor of our bedroom, rolling out and listening to a podcast, like rolling out my muscles on it with like a foam roller and just bawling. I was listening to, this is so funny. Remember when that murder podcast was really popular?
No. Miss Dr. John?
That was about the one, Adnan. And it was like about a murder that the guy was accused
In like Central Park or something?
Yeah, maybe. And like the woman's goal was to prove basically that he was innocent. And then actually it did end up coming to, gosh.
Oh. I totally know what you're talking about.
It's like one word. It's a one word name for the podcast.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, this is going to drive me nuts. We'll think about it.
I did listen to it. I know what you're talking about.
Yep. Wow. Either way.
It was very Radio Lab-y.
Yes. It was well done. It was extremely addicting. I was obsessed with it. And so I was listening to that and I was rolling out, and we had a friend over. One of Wes's friends was over, and I was just like, no, I cannot be. I was probably like 6 or 7 weeks pregnant. And it's a guy that I like a lot, but I was just feeling so weird and internal, and like I could not be social. I could not hang out, and I was rolling out and I was listening to this podcast and I was just crying, and I was like, I ruined our relationship. We haven't even traveled. We haven't done this. We haven't done that. We've barely gotten together. And now we're going to add this like baby dynamic and like, what about us? And da da da. And obviously I was still really happy to be pregnant, but I just did not consider or think about that, you know? So There is a lot of stuff that can happen mentally in our heads. And even if it is something that you really want, even after 15 years of you and Mike being together, it's like, it is kind of nerve-wracking knowing that you're going into something that is going to change the dynamic that you have so well established with your partner. And then there's people that don't have a partner at all, or maybe they thought they were going to have a partner and then they get, you know, they're doing the single mom thing. And so there's so much that can happen with that, and it can start right away. And I just think we need to remind people that that's a possibility, and you're also not alone, even though everybody talks about it like it's once you have a kid and you have a baby in your arms that that's when your life whole changes. It's just not that way. Actually, for a lot of people, it's the second you become pregnant, everything changes. And and there's, you know, a lot of things that you don't have control over what's happening. And so we need to kind of do that. What's that prayer that, like, I should know this, but, you know, it's like, pray that oh my God, I'm going to butcher everything.
We don't know anything. Our memories are completely botched. Nothing we've ever learned is in our head.
Welcome to mom brain having right before you. It's the serenity prayer, maybe? It's like the, please give me the
grant me the serenity. Yes. Everyone listening knows if we can't
decide. Us. Everyone except for us.
I know.
I'm talking about. It's like, tell me, you know, like, help me figure out what
it's like. God grant me the serenity to do. I don't know. We'll have to look
understand,
it up.
You know, what I can control and then forget it, or, you know, surrender into the things that I can't control.
Yep. Oh my gosh. Okay. It's very well known. I'm sure everyone knows exactly what we're talking about.
There's thousands of people just shaking their heads going, what in the world? How do they not know this? Okay. So, anyways, yes, that kind of an idea of distinguishing, delineating in your life, can I do anything about this? And if the answer is yes, then try, you know. But at some point too, there's a little bit of like a find the balance of being like, well, I have morning sickness. I'm going to try ginger and homeopathy and blood sugar regulation and electrolytes, and I'm going to eat in the middle of the night and da 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 da. And I'm going to try to do all these things. And it's like, sort of at the end of the day, if you've tried everything and it's not working, we need to kind of just accept what it is. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be forever. It totally sucks though. And that feeling, that cellular feeling of being like deeply poisoned or like hungover. It is so terrible. And it's really, really obnoxious because it's every second of every day for months and months and months.
Yeah. And it's like mentally super trying. And I don't think not everybody has gone through an experience like that, which, by the way, I looked it up. Oh God, give us the serenity to accept what cannot be changed, the courage to change what can be changed, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That is just brilliant. Isn't that brilliant?
So good. Mic drop. Yeah.
Thank you, God.
With that. Very good. Praise be to God. That we can't remember anything either. But yes, it's so true. And I think surrender, you know, for me in my journey,
I'm looking up the murder podcast now. I can't not do it.
I talk.
Okay, thank you.
For me, our infertility journey taught me a lot of surrender, but it was a really hard journey to get there. And I get it for someone who's new on this journey, who maybe hasn't even gotten pregnant or isn't going through infertility or has never really had to go through a hardship where it's not what you want. You know, I would say, especially our generation in privileged, you know, the United States, most people, for the most part, you know, don't have tons and tons of experience of like having this really deep rooted wanting and can't have it. Mm-hmm. You know, for the most part, if you want to go to school, you know, there's resources and things for people to help you with that. And, you know, if you want to work hard, you can create whatever you want. You know, in our country, at least, there's a lot that you can do if you have your heart set on something. And for infertility, at least, it's like you want this, it should happen, and it's not happening. And that is such a mind game in and of itself. But then pregnancy is similar, where, you know, once you become pregnant, it's like you want it to be this beautiful thing that you have imagined or that maybe other people have experienced, or, you know, what you think it should be and it's not. And the more suffering comes most when you are in the most like dissonance with your current reality and what you want.
Yes.
And obviously I'm all about like manifestation and attracting what you want, bringing that into your space, but checking in with your current reality of if you will not accept that, it just creates more suffering. So how do you get to a place of knowing that like this isn't ideal for me right now? I don't want it. I'm taking steps to try to help it. And underlying it all, there's this element of surrender of I can't control this and I'm not going to keep fighting it because that only creates suffering. How can you like lean into it even if it really sucks? So again, some women's experience of pregnancy is great. You know, they love it. Yeah. It's awesome. And when I was sharing a lot about my sickness in my early pregnancy, so many people reached out and were like, I had the same experience. I, you know, felt super depressed and suicidal and felt like I was going to die and, you know, all these things. And like, we just don't talk about that as a society. And so I just want anyone listening, no matter what their experience they have, to know that most likely you are not alone. Excuse me. You're not alone. And there's so many people doing that. And you can't really prepare for what's coming because it's a big unknown box, which is sort of like birth, you know, which I'm sure you can speak to, where you want it to go a certain way. You imagine it being a certain way. You've had people with certain experiences that have been around you, but you have zero idea what's actually going to happen. And you have to just step forward into it. You can't change it. And you have to just accept and surrender to whatever is going to happen. And that, like exercising that muscle, if I would give any advice to any person going through the I want to become a mother journey, it is exercising that muscle because it will apply in kids too.
It's the mental resilience. It's like building slow, steady mental resilience takes time. And sometimes we're thrown into these experiences where we really don't have any time. And so we're like at the bottom of the pool trying to swim up being like, oh my God, this is so hard and so trying and I've never done anything like this. Like you were mentioning where people, in America especially, like this quick convenience sort of culture that we have where it's like very little work for huge outcomes and immediate gratification and all of this different stuff. It's like we do feel like we have control over everything. We don't also don't have a strong cultural, you know, despite like, you know, if you're, you belong to a certain religion or something, but I think that there's just sort of a lack of cultural tenets or concepts that are woven throughout all of our lives in this country, just because we are such a melting pot where there's not, you know, wisdom and idioms that are passed along like there is in certain other places that could lend itself to us as little kids kind of building that early on. This is where like having a, some sort of an internal, it doesn't have to be meditation necessarily, but something like that, a mindfulness practice can be very helpful because when we fight reality, like you were mentioning, it is reality. Like it is what it is. And at some point, like, you know, cause then people will take it to the nth degree. And I'm thinking about like the free birth people, which I think free birth is awesome. But I also think that there is a toxic concept that's woven in through some of the stuff that's put out by them. That's like, no, there's no, there's no problems ever. And there's no reason to ever step foot in a hospital or do these things. And it's like, okay, except what about X, Y, and Z?
Except
and
all the other times that you do. Yeah, the same with fertility. You know,
it's like well,
sometimes you need help.
Yes. And so we need to be able to wrap our minds around this idea of like, I'm going to do, this is what I was kind of trying to touch on earlier. And I just want to repeat it because I don't know if I explained it very well. But like, I'm going to give this XYZ certain amount of effort. And this is going to be sort of my plan to deal with this issue. And if after that, it's like an experiment. It's like, okay, if after this, it's still not better or whatever it is the outcome that you're trying to get, then this is my plan after that. Like, you know, a plan A and a plan B and a plan C. And so just an example of that could be like, I give with the morning sickness thing, or if it's even just like getting pregnant, it's like, okay, we're going to try for a year or let's outline something that we think would be ideal. I'm going to try for 6 months. And if after 6 months, nothing's happening, then I'm going to look into some further testing. And then after that, if this isn't happening, then I'm going to do da 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 da. Then I'm going to do da 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 da. Then I'm going to go da 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 da. And at some point, you're not giving up in terms of like throwing your hands up and being all defeated, but just like we're surrendering to the, we're not going to just continue to fight reality and be like, no, it's going to happen this way. It's going to happen. It's like, yeah. Well, there's a lot of things outside of our control. It's not like tying your shoes. If you want to tie your shoes a certain way, then go ahead, because you have 100% control over the way you're going to tie your shoes.
Yeah.
You just don't have control when there's a baby involved in almost all steps of the way. It's a third party person now in this group of people, or sometimes if it's just a single mom and a baby, but like usually it's a trio of some form, right? And so it's like, okay, there is a new spirit here that's entering your sphere. That can be partially part of the reason why we don't feel well, I think, too. And there's some book I read, I don't know what it was, that was saying that like morning sickness in a spiritual sense could be the baby's signaling to the mom, like, I'm here, I'm like around, I'm here. And like, this isn't just about you anymore. And not in a mean way that the baby's kind of trying to be like, I'm taking you over like a parasite. Like, not in that kind of way, but just sort of like, hey, your autonomous, independent life that you've had from as a maiden your whole life, meaning like maiden using that terminology from maiden, mother, and crone, the three kind of phases of a woman's life, like it's transitioning and it's, and transitions are hard. Transitions suck of all kinds. Transitioning into a new role, out of a role, into a new house or space or whatever it is, being pregnant is a big, long, huge transition. You're not quite a maiden anymore and you're not quite a mother just yet. And it's tough. And so it's sort of maybe the baby signal of like, hey, I'm around, things are about to shift and change. You know, and there's so much beauty in motherhood. Like, we're not trying to paint this to be a bad thing. We're just trying to like also recognize and acknowledge that there is difficulty in this phase and you're not alone. And I think that there's purpose behind a lot of it too. And so it's like, we can't battle the reality of like, you're not going to be able to make it go away. And so you can try a few things and then you have to sort of at some point find your other way of coping, whatever that is. And the mental resiliency, like you were mentioning, if you can get that to be a strong exercised muscle from now ad nauseum, it only gets to be more important as you have multiple children and you're trying to parent and you're trying to live your life and do this work and da 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 and whatever it is. And it's like, now they're noisy and they're breaking things and they're drawing on the walls and they're whatever. It's like a constant building. And thankfully that muscle gets to be strengthened slowly over time as we have these experiences with our older children and the more children, et cetera, et cetera. But I just, yeah, I wanted to touch on this idea of like making a plan and then also just kind of being like, hey, you know what? I'm relaxing into this. It is what it is. Like, I used to do this with mastitis sometimes. I would be like, no, I'm not going to, no, it's not happening. It's not happening. Cause I'd panic when I started to feel that it was happening again. And I got to the point though, eventually, I mean, you do after like 12 times where when I would feel it and I was like, oh, okay, I have mastitis. This is what's happening. I'm going to do these three things. I'm going to bed. And like, I'm not going to feel like I need to be every minute of every day working on it, doing something, getting rid. I'm just going to be and rest. And I know that my body's going to take care of it. And I'm going to like be a human, having a human experience that sucks, that I hate. I hate this experience with every inch of my body, but I'm not going to dwell on that because it doesn't make it better. It doesn't make it go away faster. And that's the case for a lot of this stuff when it comes to pregnancy and parenthood.
Yeah. I mean, I've shared this story before and you've heard it 1,000 times, but someone's maybe new.
Tell me again.
Tell me everything about you. I remember having this internal reflection moment when I was going in for my C-section with my daughter, where, you know, I'm such a natural birth advocate. I wanted a home birth. We did everything possible. I was in labor for so long. And we did everything, you know, and I was so afraid of the hospital. I was so afraid of having a C-section. And despite that, I remember this so vividly. It's like one of those moments in your mind that just implants into your brain. I remember sitting on the table when we had to make the decision to have a C-section after my super long labor that was not progressing. And the acceptance, because it took me so many years to accept our infertility journey. I struggled with that so much. I was like, no, this isn't happening. I'm a natural doctor. We don't need IVF. We're going to find the root cause. This isn't happening. No, like I fought our current reality so hard. It caused so much suffering and so much turmoil. It required me to go to so many therapists and so many energy healers. And I really had to like dig deep inside of myself and like bring up like the darkest shit for years until I got to a place of acceptance. And I did, with our infertility journey after 6 years. I really did. I got to that place of acceptance. It took a long time. And I just remember with the C-section, I felt like I moved through those stages so fast. And I got to this place of surrender and acceptance and being at peace with it, something I didn't want. It's not like I wanted it. I wasn't even like, oh, I hope I end up in a C-section. I really didn't want it. But I moved through those stages. I like remember imagining like our fertility journey and it taking this like incredibly long time to go through this process. And then being there on the table and being like, wow, I learned so much. Like I really have learned this acceptance and surrender piece. And I felt really proud of my soul, you know, because I feel like there's a part of us that we come here to this planet to like learn and evolve as souls and learn our lessons. And a lot of times people don't learn their lessons. So maybe they come back if you believe in that or not, or they're presented with the same challenge in that lifetime of like, did you learn your lesson? Like, how are you responding to this? And I just remember being really proud of my soul being like, I feel like I actually get it. I learned and I'm being presented with a similar obstacle and I've behaved in a different way. And I was like so proud of myself.
Oh my gosh. My whole body has like really hard chills. That was so beautiful. I'm so proud of you and happy for you.
It was so beautiful. And I like was really proud of myself because I was like, I feel like the universe or God or whoever is throwing me another lesson to be like, have you learned your lesson of surrender? And I was like, I really feel like I did. And then I was happy. And I had this great postpartum, even though I had a C-section and I couldn't walk for like months and, you know, all of these things that weren't ideal. And I like didn't do a vaginal swab on my baby's microbiome and all the things that I like know I should have done. And I was just like, you know what? This is my acceptance. And so that's if I know it's so hard to give that to somebody because it kind of is an earned practice. It's like you can't just say, oh, I want you to be in shape. It's like you actually have to go to the gym every day and work out and do that. Like there is that part. But for someone going through this journey, whether they're preparing for pregnancy or preparing for parenthood, to just be aware of like, how can I like lean more into that practicing of that muscle? Because the more that you do and the faster you can get to that acceptance piece, I just think is going to help you in every aspect. And if there was one overarching thing, at least that I would say, like you said, it comes up with everything, whether it's pregnancy, birth, postpartum, your children as babies, your children as toddlers, as adults. It's like getting to that place of not compliance where you're just like roll over, like you said, like you're still actively trying to do stuff, but getting to that place of acceptance when you can't change it. So
I think that this also has like little micro examples. Thank you for that, by the way. I think that was really great. Micro examples of like sometimes in this kind of crunchy natural health world where people will like really, really trip out about the quality of their food or whatever, like they would never give their kid the cupcake at the party or something. And it's like, say for the situation of, you know, celiac disease, some kind of food intolerance, diabetes, et cetera, like, okay, but this is just what it is. And like your kid is going to, and I know we do, we have control over the kids' food as a kid, as parents, we do. And there's some sort of balance with that.
Yeah.
Like living in these extremes is really not great. Everything is going to be better in that mix of gray or like Gary Vee says in that podcast. So we're going to link a podcast episode that we've just been talking about where it's with Wellness Mama and Gary Vee. And he's talking about how he thinks that he was perfectly parented. And like, there's a couple of just really good one-liner nuggets in the podcast that I think that people will benefit from. But at one point he's talking about, he's using politics as an example. And he's like, are you red or are you blue? And like, the answer is always going to be purple, you know? And if we need to just be in this purple, or like in your household, is one of your parents very complacent and just a pushover? And then the other one is really, really strict. And the answer is that both of the parents need to come back into the middle, not that they need to compensate for the other parent's kind of weaknesses in whatever way that it is. And so I bring that up just because I think that it's like we need to have this idea in our minds that we're not going to go to the absolute farthest extreme of fighting the reality of what is before us in any of the ways in our life. Like, we're going to do the best we can. Okay, like, did my kid have a smoothie today? Do they have some blueberries? Okay, great, sweet. Now move on. Like, they're having this experience. There's benefit in sharing in food and food experiences with other humans in community. There is benefit there. Yes, is there mm-hmm. Red 40 and there's high fructose corn syrup? Sure, whatever. But that actually sometimes is not as negative as we think in the context of the whole situation. But I think we can
like
get
isolating
really,
your child where they can't, you know,
yes,
be a part
isolate
of
the child, making them feel like other or making them feel resentful of you because this, not the other. I mean, this is just another example. But okay, so anyway, let's kind of shift into some of the other things that we can think about when you are pregnant. Stuff that would be good to. Oh my God, the podcast is called Cereal.
Oh, yes.
Cereal, like Cereal Killer.
Cereal Killer. Yes. Oh, my God. I binged that podcast. That is so funny. I feel like I don't do it. Things that are pop culturally very much. But
I know.
Yes,
same.
Right.
I was like.
Did it just come into your head?
No, I looked at it. I just looked at it. Yeah.
I was going to say, you're a genius.
Oh, my gosh. I should have just told you that I was.
I know. You're like, yes, it just popped. That's what we can all believe.
Yes. Cereal. Yeah, that was a really good one. And then I actually think there's some kind of like – sequel that ended up coming out of that
I'll
I never
watched that.
Yeah, oh, listen so to good. It. So, like some of the ways that we can also help this, besides just like the surrendering aspect, the understanding that we can't fight reality, is potentially making some actual real life shifts in your life if that is something that is feasible. So, whether that's between your work life balance or the way that you work, or if there's flexibility in the role that you have, if you're having a very, very hard struggle and there is that. Room to like you gave the example before we started the podcast about a teacher patient that you had who became an admin role during her pregnancy because she was having a very hard pregnancy. And as we know with teachers, they can't just like leave and go to the bathroom and stuff. They're mm-hmm. responsible for a classroom. And so
I learned so much about teachers. I'm like, well, you guys can't eat. You can't go up pee. I'm like, this is so crazy.
It is kind of crazy.
So yeah, we understand that, you know, the roles of the work that we have chosen allows for a little bit more flexibility. Not everybody has that. We get that. But can you think ahead of time of a way that you can shift? Oh my God, you guys, I have such a frog in my throat. I keep
get it out.
Going,
I'll kiss it.
I don't know. I woke up with a frog. It's probably all the smoke here, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a huge fire here. But you know, can you shift something? You know, are you a server at a restaurant? Maybe you could be the hostess. So you don't have to be on your feet all the time. Or, you know, if you're, like I said, in the teacher role, can you shift to admin? Or can you potentially ask your boss if you can shift to hybrid and do, you know, part at home and part in the office? Or, you know, there's like lots of different ways, or even change jobs. You know, maybe you don't necessarily even love your job. Could you get a different job or pull back, or maybe even move to be closer to family or friends or something like that? Because for me, I know I had to prepare and change a lot around my work when I got pregnant, and I was not expecting that. I thought I was going to have this really amazing, easy pregnancy. I had a friend who built an entire business during her pregnancy, and I was like, that's going to be me. And I remember you telling me, you're like, just don't expect that because it might not happen. I was like, whatever, Morgan, you don't know anything about me and my work.
Except I know every single thing about you.
I know you totally did. And it's like, it's not even about work ethic. Like, I mean, I have been in like both my pregnancies broken down and cried for the people who had to work 9 to 5s, because if I had, I would have been fired. I couldn't. I like literally wouldn't have been able to go into work.
Yeah. And there are situations where that happens, and it's kind of gnarly. I mean, the same thing with maternity leave here, but there's just a very big lack of recognition and acknowledgement in this country of how this affects our physiology and our life and the way that we can or cannot work at all. You know, it's like, hello, there is something happening very large. It's almost like, and in certain situations, you can actually go on disability depending on what's mm-hmm. happening, but also, and if it's not something that you can change with your 9 to 5, then potentially your extracurriculars or like your time off, that has shifted, where maybe you were part of some kind of like intramural volleyball team or whatever. And it's like you know, shaving things off in whatever mm-hmm. way that you can. I mean, it's just something to consider and think about, knowing that it's not something that everybody's going to be able to change. But sometimes people just don't think about how, oh yeah, actually this, I have more like flexibility with my role than I am taking into consideration, and that might actually really change mm-hmm. how this works. And also, depending on how your role is, it could just be temporary. It could be like for 3 months while you get through this like hard part, and then you go back or whatever it is.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Stress management can come from multiple different angles, including exercise, proper diet, and restful sleep. But did you know you can also support your stress response using herbs like ashwagandha, shatavari, rhodiola, milky oats, and holy basil? These adaptogenic herbs are the ones found in Needed's stress support product, which has become one of my absolute favorite supplements I take. It's safe to take while trying to conceive and while nursing, and at any point in your motherhood besides during your pregnancy. These herbs are commonly used in traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine to support cortisol's response to daily life and to promote restful sleep. Go to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 20% off. Again, go to thisisneeded.com and save 20% with the code HEALTHYMOTHER.
Okay, back to the show.
Okay, another thing that we wanted to talk about is this idea of navigating like sharing your pregnancy. So there's pros and cons of sharing early and of sharing late. So sometimes people want to wait until they can see that the baby is viable and going to make it into that second trimester. So there's traditionally, in most situations, there's an ultrasound around 12 weeks. And that is sometimes what people are waiting for before they tell. Now, the pro and con of that would be, the pro being that in case you do have a miscarriage, you maybe aren't having to deal with telling people and having that kind of, whether it's maybe feeling shame or just the attention that you don't really want because you want to grieve privately. And then also maybe being able to share really good news that's positive, that's likely to stick and stay around. And, you know, once we know we're 12 weeks with a heartbeat and everything, the con though could be that you are now living in this experience, however it goes, good or bad, by yourself and lonely. And usually people tell somebody, they have a friend or a sister or something. It's not like they're telling no one. But then also in the event of a miscarriage, which 1/4 of pregnancies will end in miscarriage. So it's a high-ish number. And I'm not saying that to scare people. I'm just saying it to normalize the experience of miscarriage is that you maybe wouldn't be getting as much support as you wanted, you know?
Yeah.
And so then the flip side, if you're going to tell early, you have a lot of excitement around you and you can get that kind of support and you can be open and transparent and vulnerable about the way that you're feeling, whether it's good or bad. But then on the flip side, if something does end up having working or, you know, not working out with the pregnancy, now you have all these people to tell and that can be really trying too. I don't know. What was your opinion about that for yourself with telling?
I mean, I didn't really tell a lot of people publicly that we were even going through IVF until I knew that we had a successful pregnancy, mostly because I had a lot of shame about it and being a doctor, being a natural doctor, being in that regard. And obviously all of our family knew. For me, my kind of rule of thumb is whoever I would tell if I had a loss, I'm okay telling that I'm pregnant because I'm going to tell them that I had a loss anyways.
Yeah.
But anyone I'm not okay with, you know, telling that I had a loss or whatever, I wouldn't tell. There's that frog again. So yeah, it's tricky and something to just think about. And you might just decide in the moment as well once you become pregnant, but it's just something to have on your horizon because I think some women, I've had people almost feel like they think it's this unwritten law that you can't tell anyone about your pregnancy, you know, because it's so like culturally ingrained, like, oh, don't say anything. And it's like, if you want to, you totally can. Just know if something happens, you're going to have to tell those people that something happened. But there's no law, there's no rule, there's no like crazy thing. If you're a social person and you really do well with support in your community, like find that community to support you. Especially also, a lot of women have shared with me that they didn't tell a lot of people they were pregnant and they were really sick and they were really suffering and they had a really hard mental state in early pregnancy and there was no one there to like support them. They had to pretend at work that everything was fine or they had to pretend around their friends that everything was fine. Because they were not telling anyone they were pregnant and suffering. Oh my God, this frog.
It's okay.
It's the smoke. We'll
name it. Let's give it a name.
Oh, Harold.
Okay, love it.
Harold the frog. So yeah, that's just something to think about. And yeah, so that's kind of my thought on that.
And then there's the people too. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, you go.
I was just going to say, I bet that there's people too in the middle where like they were maybe not going to tell and then they started their pregnancy and felt so bad and so isolated and lonely. And then they wanted to tell people, but then they were like, now I'm not even all that happy about this though. How am I going to kind of like fake that I'm happy? You know, I mean, there's just so much. And I don't know. It's like we make ourselves wrong for everything as women. I feel like, especially in motherhood, their mom guilt begins immediately because it's just, there is people who are like, well, just be happy. Just just move on. And you know what? You just be grateful. You have life growing in you, and you should never ever feel anything else. And it's like, okay.
I had people tell me that this pregnancy. They're like, well, just pretend like you're not sick. Just wake up and act like you're not sick. And I'm like, okay. Oh my gosh. Will definitely try that.
And you know what, Susan?
Mind over matter. It's like, you're right. I mean, there is a truth to, you know, the mental health, you know, you can prepare for things in your mind. I'm a huge teacher of that. I get that until you're suffering and you just want to punch the person in the face and be like, you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. The you toxic never have positivity. This experience. Yeah. It doesn't help.
Yeah. And so given that, I really want to touch on this before we move into parenthood, which is the other piece of preparing for pregnancy is maybe doing some of your own internal work, whether that's energy release work, trauma release work, work around fears that might be coming up, really evaluating what your relationship was like with your own mother, with your parents, because there's a lot that pregnancy can bring up for different people for different reasons. And if you can do any of the processing beforehand, great. If not, you know, during pregnancy is awesome too. Or even like past sexual trauma.
Yeah.
You know, I did a bunch of trauma release work around my sexual trauma during my last pregnancy. And I honestly think it really helped so much. And we'll provide resources for the types of practitioners that I personally have worked with, which is like hundreds of them. I'm like a practitioner junkie, but that's what happens when you have chronic things that you're always working on. You know, between my painful intercourse, low libido, and infertility, I've seen a lot of people and I have had a lot of different experiences. So I'll share that list of the types of trainings that different practitioners have that is a little outside of just the traditional therapy model. And then some of my favorite referrals too.
I'm so glad that you brought up the sexual trauma thing too. We should probably have a whole episode about this, but when it comes to birth too, this is something that can take people by surprise that they did not realize that potentially the act of giving birth and just any of the cervical checks and feeling that kind of vulnerability and the way that it is explicitly woven into sexuality in that kind of a way that it can bring things up. It can be like extremely triggering. It can be something that, you know, especially if you weren't prepared for that to happen, or if your provider isn't trauma informed to be able to walk through that with you and hold space for you and also acknowledge that that's happening. And let's just pretend there's a situation where like maybe the woman stalled out or is progressing slowly or something is happening, you know, where it's like, hey, is there anything that we need to like let go of more? Ideally, yes, like you said, we're not doing that during the birth, but it is also, it's not super common, but I mean, I've heard many stories of this sort of a situation happening, and the midwife or the OB, usually a midwife, just because they have the kind of like wherewithal to speak about these sorts of things, can sit there and have like a little bit of a release situation with them and be there present and hold space and witness and make a, you know, kind of rewrite in their nervous system a safety and vulnerability around things happening with your vagina and, the opening and the just that whole entire feeling. It's just something to consider and think about if that has been part of your story. And, you know, unfortunately, that's been part of your story, which as so many women have, that this can come up to affect birth. And so having that on your radar is important. So I'm glad.
Yeah. And there are absolutely ways to work on that before the birth comes so that it isn't like you're doing it in the middle. You know, there's somatic release practitioners, pelvic PT, craniosacral therapists, trauma release people. So we'll put them all in there, but just know that. And with this being mindful of time, let's transition to preparing for parenthood. And I just want to piggyback off of what we just said on this topic, which the same thing can happen during parenthood. Once the baby's here, it can bring up a lot of stuff for people.
Oh, yeah.
And pregnancy, if you have a partner, let's say you have a traditional male partner or a female partner, but especially in like the traditional sense, there are a lot of shifts and changes. And I've just seen personally in my own life with friends and family and patients that I feel like the men are very ill prepared for everything that's coming, you know, with pregnancy, with parenthood, and, you know, having the conversation, being open with your partner ahead of time that like, hey, when we become pregnant, I might not want to have sex with you for a while. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, once the baby comes, you know, we need to have a plan of how do we continue to prioritize ourselves and what kind of conversations do we have if we are in a season of unable, like we're not able to prioritize our relationship and our intimacy and our connection. Because there are seasons in parenthood when you're literally just trying to survive. You're barely sleeping. The baby's freaking out. You know, maybe you have a colicky baby, whatever, like you're touched out. You don't want anything. And if there's never been a prior conversation, it can breed resentment. It can breed jealousy, you know,
misunderstanding,
all of that. And so obviously if you hadn't prepared, you can still have these conversations, but I think it's better to even have them ahead of time to just give your partner and yourself kind of a warning and a preparedness of, hey, this could be coming and what tactics and strategies are we going to have in place so that we don't resent each other or have these things that come up or, you know, who are you going to go see or what, how are you going to approach me in a way? Because if people aren't conscious and aware of their stuff, then it can come out as anger or, you know, little nitpicky mean things that are said, and it just, it can breed into like a really bad situation versus if you have this plan and you're aware and you're kind of expecting this to come, you know, like last night, my husband and I, he's so stressed out right now because he has a startup and it's like, I kind of wanted to be intimate with him. And he was just like, I can't, like, I'm like so in my head, which is super unlike him. And it's like, we talked about it and we had an open conversation and it was just like, you're right. Like right now we're in a season, you're building this like business baby. This is like having a newborn baby where this is just not the time where we're going to have a ton of time for each other. Mm-hmm. And that's okay because, and I said, and we just need to have a plan for how we're going to come back together mm-hmm. when we have that time. And I understand and recognize that this isn't the time. And I don't want that to become our new normal.
Yeah, the rift that never comes back together.
Exactly. So just like having that open conversation about it instead of ignoring it or resenting it. And, you know, my husband and I have been through a lot of like open communication around navigating all sorts of things with painful sex and low libido and infertility and starting 4 businesses and all of that. So we've had to learn, and he was not a very communicative person, still isn't. And so how we navigate that, you know, but I think just having those conversations is really important even before you become parents.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. And I know that I've talked about this here before too, but just the one thing that I think that we kind of made the mistake of, Wes and I, with our second born, was that we fell into this pattern of like, I was doing everything with the baby and then he was doing everything with our first. And we sort of split off in that way. We can fall into like pathologically good roommates kind mm-hmm. of a thing, or yeah. we're really good tag team partners, but mm-hmm. it's not as much this like romantic thing. Obviously I love him in this deep way, but we very rarely go on dates, and it's something that we are constantly trying to reprioritize for ourselves now, you know, after 4 kids. It's like, it can become this like wedge that drives between you, where then if it goes on too long, it's not that it can never come back together. Of course it can. And just don't think that you're immune to the fact that that could happen, and yeah. recognize it when it does and make efforts to bring it back together in whatever way that you think will be better for that. Like right now I went with him on like a little trip. We're going to go in a couple weeks because he has some business meetings, and I'm just sort of like tagging along because we have the luxury of my mother-in-law living in our back house right now. And so she's going to watch the other 3, and it's like, such a treat. It's such a treat yeah. because we have had very, very little time that was sort of just us. And I mean, the baby's with us too, of course, because she's nursing, but she doesn't really count. Like, she's not 3 other little ones that are talking. She can't talk, you know? And so we get to have these uninterrupted conversations, and it's just so healing. And I think for the people who maybe haven't had kids yet and are listening to this, are like, oh my God, okay, you can't like get it together to have more than just like a couple trips or conversations with your husband that way. And it's just, I don't know, it just happens. It's like, mm-hmm. it can get away from you really quickly and easily. So yeah, I love that idea. And also I think for the woman to prepare the man, or the woman, whoever the partner is, but specifically, yes, like you were saying in the man sense, that like, let's have just like a quick rundown conversation with our partners about the the actual physiology and biology of what's happening to our bodies, because I feel like it takes some of the personal attack out of it. Like it takes it's not that I don't want to have sex with you because I don't think you're attractive or that I'm in love with someone else. It's like my hormones are literally mm-hmm. trying to not make me want to have a baby right now because I'm nursing a baby. And it's totally my physiology right now. I'm also, like you said, I'm touched out by the end of the day. Like I don't want to be touched. I want to be completely alone in my little bear cave and like that or whatever. And so I think if they can understand that, and if they are male, they probably have zero context for that if they don't get the education somehow. So it's like, this is real. This is very real. And it's not about, you know, you and me and not feeling like, you know, we have no sex life anymore. It's just that right now in this season, this is what's happening. And so expect it less. And also maybe there's going to need to be more lube situation or more foreplay, or, you know, it's how this whole dynamic dance is constantly shifting and changing. Some people don't have that, of course, like they don't have that experience. Everything is normal and fine and whatever. But I would say that it's much more common to have intimacy changes after you've had a baby. I mean, literally just the logistics of when are you going to do it? And when, you know, that in and of itself is a big deal. But then also like the way that we get what is your plan for feeding this baby? What is your plan for if breastfeeding's hard? Are we like supportive of it? Is partner going to support you all the way through it? What about your sleep priority? Like did one of you come from the train of thought that we were going to sleep train the baby at 6 weeks and they were going to cry it out? And the other one was like, we're going to co-sleep? Because those are really different.
Talking to each other about parenting styles, that's our next like tip is before you become parents, ideally, obviously, if you're already parents, still talk about it. But before you become parents, to really talk about these big things, because I've seen families where it wasn't talked about. And like maybe the woman is like, we're co-sleeping. And the man's like, what? We're not co-sleeping. Like the baby's not going to be in our bed for the next 2 years, you know? And then they're fighting, you know, postpartum, exhausted, depleted. Mm-hmm. And it just creates a wedge versus like, if you can have that conversation before baby comes, when you're both, you know, in a better mindset, maybe the people have time to process and think about it or research and learn, like just getting more clear on your parenting style. I know one thing that Mike and I decided because of our infertility journey, we saw a lot of people have children around us, people we knew very well. And one thing that we really noticed seemed more of a struggle for families was when like one parent would say something to a child and then the other parent would say the opposite thing in front of the child. And then they sort of fought with each other in front of the child. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the mom would say, well, you can't have that cookie. And then the dad will say like, well, no, he can, you know, and then in front of the child, you know, they're arguing about the cookie versus what, you know, let's say my husband tells my daughter, you can have the cookie and I don't want her to have the cookie. But I am going to stand behind my husband in that moment and we come as a cohesive group in front of the child, you know, and I'm not going to argue with him in front. I will talk to him about it in private to be like, hey, I really don't think we should give her a cookie before she has dinner, you know, type of thing. But instead of making it like mommy versus daddy energy, because then the children will start to be like, oh, you know, and just how can you, and Mike and I remember we had that very conscious decision where we're like, when we parent, I want us to make sure that we back each other up when we say something. These are the ways we want to parent. We're not going to be perfect. We'll both make mistakes. But like we want to come as a cohesive unit with our children and talk about discrepancies like behind closed doors. And we had that exact conversation, I remember, like years ago. And to this day, you know, no one's perfect. We still make mistakes for sure. But I will notice that we'll do that. And, you know, if someone, if, you know, Avi, my daughter, you know, they're smart. They start to learn that like mommy and daddy do things differently and she'll say something and then she'll go to, I'll say no. And she'll go to Mike and he'll say, what did your mom say?
Yeah, there you go.
You know, he didn't answer you. Well, what did your mom say? And it's like really cute. And she's starting to learn like, oh shoot, like they always are on the same page. So that's just like one example. And you might not choose to do that as a parent, but that was something that I chose to do. And so, you know, in preparing for parenthood, maybe paying attention to the other people who parent around you and finding things that you feel like you like or that you resonate with, and just having those conversations ahead of time versus in the moment, you know, fighting or arguing or, you know, having these pieces, which it totally will happen, but
yeah, but or like just don't be shocked if we like that this kind of a thing can be a division between you and your partner if you haven't really like come to an agreement on whatever it's going to be. And there's going to be stuff too that like you would never be able to prepare for that in the moment, or not in the moment, but like in that season. Now you have a 6-year-old and you've never had a 6-year-old before. Yeah. And now you're kind of like, oh shoot. And then you guys will have these kinds of conversations, and just know that that's like literally a never ending process. And it's so important to do. You're right. Like to be on the same page with stuff. And then also that there's going to be probably very rarely do people agree on every single thing. And so whether that's what to do about school or vaccines or discipline methods and chores and like, you know, does the kid make their bed in the morning or not? Like sometimes people are raised in a family where like they couldn't ever understand the idea of not doing that. And then the other one doesn't really care. And so then it's a trigger. It's like a, like I'm trying to think so in my relationship, I'm more strict than Wes is. Big surprise there. And, okay. Like this is like one thing that I don't know. It must have been the way that I was parented. And this is the thing about parenting. It comes out in ways you would never even imagine. Like the fact that sometimes I walk into my son's room to say goodnight to him at night and Wes is already in there saying goodnight to him and like laying with him, talking with him for a moment. And the floor of my son's room is like completely destroyed. There's just toys and clothes and things everywhere, baseball cards on every surface. I'm like, how could you walk in here and tuck him into bed and not have him clean this up first? Like we don't go to bed. In my mind, I'm like, we don't go to bed with like a messy room. Are you kidding? Like I don't do that kind of thing though. Like that's just me. Like I'm also the kind of person that no matter how late we get in from a trip, I unpack my whole bag right away. It's like one of those.
Wow. That's like a fun thing you should tell at icebreakers about yourself. It takes me like a week to unpack.
No, Leah, are you kidding? Okay, there are so many things about you that I like you. I'll never forget. I think about it all the time, actually, because about how you were at my house. I don't know, this is maybe like 5 months ago or something like that. And there was toys all over the floor in my house. And I was looking at you and I was like, this drives me nuts. Like I am so stressed out right now about all this stuff. And you looked at me and you were like, oh, I don't even see this. Like I could care less. Like I don't even see this. And that just seems so out of line with what I would say is consistent with the rest of your personality, because you're so like high functioning and like organized and I don't know. You're just like very, you get like, da, 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 but then messes don't really bother you, which really surprises me, because then we're opposite in that other way, because messes bother the crap out of me. But I'm
and noise
like
bothers me and it doesn't
bother
you. Yes,
and noise doesn't bother
me. I could walk into a messy room, no problem, but like the screaming, shrieking, like loud TV, like, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to explode. And you're like, I don't even hear it. Like last night at dinner, you're like, I don't even hear the TV. I'm like, oh my God, I am crawling out of my skin. Yeah, it's just so funny. I love organization. I love cleanliness, but it doesn't bother me.
Okay, and then what is Mike about that?
Mike, we're similar in that, but he's probably more bothered. And he comes from a house where like you put every single dish away. Like you wash and dry the dish and put it back where it belongs before you go to bed. And I'm like, I'm tired. Like I would prioritize sleep. Like if the kitchen's messy, I'm like, I'll clean it in the morning. It's fine, you know? Okay. And he's okay with that. But, you know, we have our different ways of being. But neither of us are kind of neurotic about it. We both feel better when the house is clean. But yeah, neither of us are like losing our shit about it. We both are sensitive to sound though. So it's going to be, that's why I'm nervous to have a boy.
Like, yeah. Oh I mean, it'll probably, regardless of just two kids, it'll definitely be louder, but you know, you'll get used to it too, I think.
But these are just like kind of things. Like another thing preparing for parenthood is, you know, if you're that type A person who's like, I must have everything perfect, not one smudge on a window, you know, I must have all white furniture with like glass, you know, you might have to shift some things because kids might change stuff. And I'm the kind of person who always tries to find a blend between beauty and aesthetics and functionality, you know, there are some gives and takes that will come. And so doing a self-evaluation of yourself on things like this, are you sensitive to messes? Are you sensitive to noise? Are you someone who like must have XYZ and what is your partner like? Because these are the kind of things that will trigger you in parenthood. So there, I don't know, maybe you should create a resource for people, Morgan, about like a checklist of what to ask yourself before you become a parent.
Yeah,
of,
like, I actually
some
have
self-reflection.
Like, no, I have like a halfway drafted ebook about this, about preparing for parenthood with your partner. It's like three P's. It's so annoying to say, but yeah, it's because it is important. And one thing that I just thought of too, that's a big one that I see to be a problem between a lot of couples is, are you planning on this with your children being like very strict and regimented about the schedule, or do you want to be more flexible and kind of go with the flow? Because it's difficult to be both. Like, you can't be the, my kid goes to bed at 7 every night parent and expect like that to, you know, flow with the sleep training and whatever. And then sometimes it's the, no, we're not going to do that, da, 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 because the other parent doesn't really hold true to those sorts of rules or whatever. And like, that can really be a difficulty. So just these ideas, and obviously you can take it in the phase that you're in. When you have a newborn, you don't need to be talking about like, when are we going to introduce Johnny to the idea of sex? Like, you don't need to do that right now with your newborn. But there is 9 months of pregnancy to begin talking about, well, how were you disciplined? How did you like the way that you were raised by your parents? Are you kind of worried about parenting? Did your parents yell at you? Did they spank you? Do you want to do that? Like, what about some options? You know how there's options. Like, do you have resentment towards your parents? Do you feel like this about your parents? You know, I don't know. All those kinds of conversations are good. And then also, yes, having a really good form of communication where you guys can come together, whether that's like nonviolent communication, which is like a book and a method that you can learn about, where it takes a lot of the pressure and the personal attack kind of energy out of difficult conversations, so that you can just express yourself very clearly so that both people can be heard. Also therapy. I think therapy is great. I think therapy, you know, of some form, but I think usually if you're going to do it together, it's going to just be therapy. Cause I know that you really like the energy healing stuff, but that's more on the individual plane. But getting somebody or having people that can be helping you navigate this, if you are really struggling with it or you feel very, very lost, is a big thing too. And just know that it does take a certain level of effort. I think, you know, good marriages and relationships should have their like flow where it's just sort of easy in a way. And now when we add all these other factors and another human now into this dynamic, it's you're not alone if there is rift and shift there. And so it's a give and take. Again, that mental resilience muscle that you've been building since your pregnancy and maybe just your whole life is going to be flexed again and again and again. It's only going to get stronger. And so I think that it would behoove us to just think about these things before we become parents, ideally. And so that's kind of the point of this. We do have some different resources in the show notes that we'll have for you guys about like other podcasts that were helpful or books or articles that could be something to kind of like be a jumping place.
Yeah. And the very last thing I want to say, because I know we're almost at an hour, is the other thing I would highly recommend people do to prepare for parenthood is to learn about attachment styles and how to support your children as much as you can in fostering more secure attachment if you can.
Yeah.
So as you dive into like the mental, emotional, psychology world, a lot of even adult issues come back to childhood stuff. You know, a lot of people have childhood wounds and childhood whatever. And it's not that I don't actually think anyone could be parented perfectly. You know, I think there's always mistakes and things. And I think that makes us who we are in certain ways. And I know firsthand the life outcomes of certain people who had more of an insecure attachment versus secure attachment. And, you know, if you can set your child up for a more secure attachment style, it could potentially really, really help their life. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, we'll put an article in the show notes about secure attachment. But there are certain things that you can do as parents, certain decisions you might want to make, and just knowing about it in general can potentially really help, because a lot of people just parent how they were parented. They don't consciously make any shifts or changes. And the more that you can kind of become aware of these things and how it impacts your children ahead of time, you know, because when you're in the throes of having just when you're in the throes of having a new child, you're not like, I'm going to go read a book about attachment styles. You know, you're like, I'm trying to survive and not die. So if you have the ability, you know, during pregnancy or whatever, to start learning up on these things, then that could be really helpful. Not that you can't once you're a parent, obviously.
Well, yeah, and it's and you will at some point, but it is nice to not wait until it's all in your face all at once, because I find it to be kind of like this big, it's almost like the tip of the iceberg kind of thing. It's like you chip away and then you just realize there's more and there's more and there's more. And as time goes on, and again, like your kids become older, you've never had a kid this age before. Now you have siblings, now you have this, that, and the other thing, and there's just more. So it's like, as long as we can wrap our heads around the idea that we're going to be doing this sort of work, if we're going to be intentional, conscious parents, forever. And that's okay. And it's beautiful. It's actually like awesome. It's one of my favorite things about being a parent is the opportunity it offers for self-development and how I've never been propelled into deeper self-development and self-analysis and improvement and, you know, facing triggers and facing traumas and deep, dark things and overcoming, you know, being the phoenix rising from the ashes in certain situations. And then also just failing repeatedly and having that be so frustrating. And then, like you said about your, acceptance experience with having your C-section and how you had that like just really healing moment for yourself of being like, I learned it, I did it. And I've had a couple of those too in my own parenting of, you know, rewriting the script of not acting a certain way or doing a certain thing or whatever it was when something came about. And I'm really proud for those moments, you know. Yay. And it's, yeah. And I mean, it takes work. I don't know if it's possible to do it without some level of work, I guess, unless we're going to be just totally mindless, but that's not the people who are listening to this. So yeah. Anyway, you guys got it. You're all awesome. You're doing great. We're in this together.
Morgan's going to make an ebook about all of these things.
Oh my goodness. I'll try.
With all of the time that she has.
Yes. In the middle of the night, I'll have my hand on my notebook and it'll just write it.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, I feel like this was a great episode. So I hope everyone enjoyed it.
Bye.
Before you go, there's one last thing. Did you know that we have a swag store now? The Healthy as a Mother store, where we sell amazing merchandise that is fun to wear. We have shirts and hats and sweatshirts. We have drinkware, bags, journals, all of the things that are healthy as a mother or related to motherhood in general. We would love if you could support our podcast by checking out our store. We love doing what we do, and it's really helpful to get the support and also to spread the word and share our amazing brand with the world. And you get some really cool, awesome stuff. One of my favorites is the crop sweatshirt and one of our glasses that we sell that says Healthy as a Mother. I just think it's so great. So head to www.healthyasamother.com/store to check out what we have. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store. And we are absolutely open to feedback. If there's something you would like to see that is not at the store, we can make a lot of different things there. So head over there, check it out, and we would love to see you sporting some Healthy as a Mother gear. And if you take a picture of yourself on Instagram, definitely tag Dr. Morgan and I, and we will be sure to share. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store to check out our merchandise.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.